CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to City Talks Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in Business. And every Sunday, I'll be taking a look at some of the week's big business stories and talking to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider Northwest region. This week, our wonderful city was mentioned in dispatches by Prime Minister David Cameron. Liverpool has been named as the best shopping centre in the world in a prestigious ceremony in Las Vegas, and the city councillor called for the local authority to have additional powers in the area of economic growth. We'll be talking about all this and some forthcoming exciting events in the city, including the Food and Drink Festival, the Run Liverpool Marathon, the International Tennis Tournament, and the fabulous Downtown City of Liverpool Business Awards. Joining me in the studio today, we have Alan Rothwell, a director of Run Liverpool Marathon, and Tony Langdon from, Tony Langdon from a great local charity, Clare House. Good morning, gents.
Good morning. Good
morning. It's great to see you this morning. And just before we get into the meat of some of this discussion and debate that I've mentioned there, I wonder if you could just tell listeners briefly what your organisations and what your role within them is. Alan, if I may start with you, because this is a really exciting new initiative to the city, isn't it, the marathon?
It's a fantastic initiative for the city, and I'm pleased and privileged to be hosting it on behalf of the city on the back of the Run Liverpool initiative, which has existed for a good 6 or 7 years now. But we're looking forward to a great event coming October. It's going to be really good fun.
And what's the difference between what's happened previously in Liverpool and this particular project?
I think the project is a throwback to 20 years or so ago when we last had a Mersey Marathon. And in the intervening years, we've had a series of races which we've been instrumental in developing. But we've not really had a major marathon. And to be fair, the UK hasn't had a major urban marathon. Plenty of marathons up and down the country, but none as high profile as the one that we're planning for October.
So when is the actual marathon itself? And I understand there's some events in the lead up to that, is there as well?
Well, we host events throughout the year, and we've got several events, running events before the marathon. We've also got training programs and coaching workshops which will assist people taking part. But there's a full program throughout the whole year. The marathon is really the culmination of the sporting calendar year for us, as it's going to be the biggest event that we've put on so far.
Is it right? Somebody was telling me there's going to be a tunnel run.
There is a tunnel run. We brought the tunnel back, tunnel 10K back in 2006. That disappeared for around, 4 years? Disappeared in 2002. And we were urged by the Tunnel Authority to see if we could bring it back and add it to our portfolio. And I think if my memory serves me right, we had, or in 2002, there were 693 finishes. Well, as of today, we're over 2,500. So it's an illustration of the growth of the popularity of the sport. And ultimately, the marathon is it's the pinnacle.
And it must give us yet another opportunity of showcasing the city in the best possible way, because, you know, we're all aware of the Great North Run and the London Marathon and so on and so forth. Has Liverpool's marathon got aspirations to be seen as comparable with those great events?
I think very much so. The Great North Run and the London Marathon have commandeered and dominated their particular running landscape for many years. They've been in existence for 30 years. But I think where we're looking to pitch the Run Liverpool Marathon is we'd like it to be the first marathon that people consider after London. We're not competing with London, but when you look at the marathon profile, there are plenty of marathons around the October time throughout the UK, and they're all good quality events, but none of them aspire to the kind of race day experience that the London Marathon delivers. And we're looking to sort of mimic that in our own way and put a different twist on it by creating a very high-profile Liverpool marathon.
Mm. Well, the thing is, Alan, we always do things a little uniquely anyway, don't we, in our city? But what's the level of interest for the actual marathon itself so far? Is it healthy?
I think it's very good. It's on track for what we anticipated. We'd looked at a model whereby we'd anticipated around 12,000 entries, which would give us 10,000 turn up on the day. And we're just over 7,000 at the moment. So I think we're well on track with four months to go. So we should be there or thereabouts with our 10 to 12,000 expectancy.
Mm. Now, obviously, City Talks business here. So what do you think the impact on the local business community could potentially be?
I think it's going to be significant. We've been working very closely with the Brighton Marathon, which is another young and aspiring marathon event in the city. Slightly different pitch there. Theirs is before the London Marathon, the week before, and they tap into the 80,000 rejects that don't get into the London Marathon. That's a phenomenal figure, all of whom don't get in London and really have nowhere to go. A good friend of mine, Tim Hutchings, he created the Brighton Marathon, and in the first year, he shared their economic data with me, and the impact there was £3.65 million for the marathon weekend.
And that's things like hotel stays, bars, yeah, restaurants, people who are coming to watch, the friends and the relatives, yeah, participate, yeah, whole range of things. And I guess people, they don't just come for the day, do they? They tend to stay for the weekend.
No, the rule of thumb is the further the distance that people are prepared to run, the longer they will stay, because there's no point in going for a marathon and then straight out. People will tend to stay. You know, New York is a very good example of that. I've been to New York 6 times. Simply to do the marathon. So it does have its attraction. And because of what Liverpool actually is now, we are a tourism destination. People are coming from far and wide. We've had entries from Australia, America. We've had a couple, Kansas. We've got them from across Europe, from Poland, from France. The attraction of the city is bigger than the event itself.
Mm. And how would people get involved if they were interested in actually running?
Firstly, they need to be fairly quick, because I think we've got about just over 2,000 places left, and they're going fairly steadily. All the entry information is on www.runliverpoolmarathon.co.uk.
Okay, and any advice for aspiring runners? I mean, obviously, you've got to be, I would say, very fit. I consider myself to be fit, but I wouldn't even consider running a marathon. But what sort of training, what sort of discipline is required to actually get through that sort of endurance?
I think you've got to have a certain determination to do it, because you really can't cheat the distance. Even reasonably fit people will find it a challenge. But I think the key is consistency in your training, and the series of coaching programs and the training initiatives that we've got, which are also on the website. They will assist absolute beginners at running. They will get them through the whole 26.2 mile distance, and they'll also assist experienced runners who are looking to improve. But basically, you need the determination and the willpower, or alternatively, you can look to run for charity. That brings a sort of slightly different pressure, but we do have a high number of people running for many charities across the board.
Well, that's a seamless link for me, Alan, to start having a chat to our other guest this morning. Tony, you're with the Clare House charity, yeah, a relatively new role, I think, I'm right in saying for yourself.
Yeah, that's right. I'm the new Liverpool area fundraiser. I've been here 6 weeks now.
Very new then.
Yeah, very, very new, thrown in at the deep end. But I know a lot about Clare House. My little boy used to go to Clare House, and then we lost him last March, so since then I was volunteering at Clare House. And then obviously, as I say, 6 weeks ago, decided to make the jump from the corporate world, and I now work for Clare House, which is a challenge.
Yeah, but it's a fantastic charity. I wonder if you could just tell people who may not know the work that goes on there.
Okay, first of all, Clare House is a children's hospice. Now, a lot of people will have the wrong idea of what that means. It's a lovely place. It's a happy place. It's quite a magical place, to be honest, where children with life-shortening conditions can go. They can spend time there with the families. They can spend time there when they're ill. Or they can even spend time there while the parents have a little bit of sleep at home and stuff like that. We also recently have brought a hospice to home team to fruition, which means that children who, or families who would like the children to be cared for in their own home can do that. And we have a team of nurses 24 hours a day that'll go to our kids at home and see them there. But obviously it doesn't come cheap, the service we provide.
And it is a wonderful place. I mean, I've visited probably 3 or 4 years ago now, and the thing that struck me was how courageous, I would say, both the staff and the kids and the families involved were. You know, that immediately strikes you. But also, as you say, the environment that's created there is such a special one, because it's almost like walking into a huge playground, isn't it? I mean, it's just fabulous in terms of the way in which it's managed and run. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about Clare House. I know it's been very high profile over the last decade or so, I guess, isn't it? It's around that time it's been running, maybe beyond, but certainly I became aware of it about 10 years ago. But how difficult in the, I hate this phrase, but the current economic climate, has it been for Clare House? As I say, high profile, does a great job, probably acknowledged as one of the best around in terms of the service it provides. But what's the challenge been like for Clare House to continue to get private sector buy-in?
Okay. I mean, first of all, yeah, you're right, 11 years Clare House has been open since, and every year has been a challenge. Now, as we're trying to spread out the work that we do and open it up to more people, because there's an amazing demand for the work Clare House does, unfortunately. But we do rely almost 100% on local businesses, the goodwill of the local people, and people that run the likes of sports events for us and stuff like that. Without their support, we would cease to exist. I think we get around about 10% of our funding comes from statutory sources. So the, you know, the rest of it is literally the goodwill of the local people in the area. Mm.
Are you aware of any pressures on that statutory spend at the moment? Because clearly we're going through a cuts agenda within the public sector as well.
Well, there's a lot of changes going on in that area. At the moment, it's the local PCTs that we approach for funding, which is extremely difficult. Now, I know there's a lot of talk about that change into GP consortiums, which will have an impact on us, but the impact as yet is really unknown to us, to be honest. Mm. It's just one other thing that we've got to worry about in the future.
Mm. There's going to be a transitional period, isn't there, over the next 3 years as local authorities and, as you say, the health economy starts to shake itself down as well. And, and there are, you know, some huge challenges that they face in terms of budgets. But ultimately, I guess if they were to look at this strategically and in the round, Clare House must provide added value and services that would never be able to be met or matched by another agency or anything else that's out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things Clare House are looking at the moment. The cost of a child staying in a hospital, for example, compared to them staying in Clare House is astronomical. And the amount of money that we do save the local authority and the NHS and the PCTs by the service we provide is something that we're trying to put a figure on. Like my little boy, for instance, was 3 months on intensive care. And while we were there, we were told it cost around about £4,000 a day to keep him there. Now, Clare House would have happily taken little Harvey, and we would have loved him to have been there. But at the time, we don't think he would have made the journey across, to be honest. But, you know, it would have been a better place for him to be, a better environment to be. And it would have been better for the rest of the family for him to be cared for at Clare House, because obviously it's catered for family to visit the people while they're receiving the care that they need. Whereas the likes of intensive care is not there for that. So, you know, I think we do save the NHS an awful lot of money, and I don't think that's recognised enough.
Mm. And as the pressure comes on those statutory bodies, as I say, I will plead with them, as I'm sure you will, Tony, to not necessarily look at that as part of the budget cuts. But things like the Liverpool Marathon become even more important for organisations such as yourself, because, as Alan has indicated, an awful lot of people get involved in these these projects, these activities, simply because they want to give something back. And they see that running a marathon is a great challenge on a personal level, but if they're doing it for and on behalf of, you know, a really good charity such as Clare House and others that are out there as well, then it just gives them that extra incentive. So, you know, from your perspective, how important is the likes of the marathon and those sorts of initiatives that do take place in and around the city?
Well, they're absolutely crucial to us, to be honest. They are like part of the lifeblood of the organisation. I think last year it was about £150,000 we got in from challenges like the marathon, the women's 10K and races like that, which obviously to an organisation of our size is crucial. And what we're doing this year, we've actually got 50 free places for people that have supported us as a bit of a thank you for them to run for us. So there are still some places left for people. But as I say, because we rely so much on them, it's a bit of a thank you this year to get more and more people involved for us as well.
So you actually basically donated those places by Run Liverpool, and you then offer them out to the people that you think are potentially going to be able to get out there and raise a few bowl for you.
That's right, yeah.
Which is fantastic gesture on their part, but also a great opportunity for you guys.
Yeah, it is definitely a great opportunity. And as you touched on before, people who are running marathons and stuff like that, if they can see the benefit of what they're raising money for when they run, it does like drive you on, as I know from my own experiences. You know, sometimes it's quite a hard thing to do, to train for a marathon, and to run a marathon is, you know, something unimaginable to most people. But if they can have in the back of their mind what they're doing it for, and it's a great, great cause, then hopefully that can help drive them on as well.
And you've just come, you just said there, Tony, from the corporate world. How much involvement did you have in charities prior to your experience with Clare House?
Well, not a great deal, to be honest. I never really seen the benefit of what charities offer. You know, the likes of Clare House, what they did for my boy and for my family, and what they do for numerous other families in the area, is not something I'd ever considered. And it's only when you need the services of things like Clare House that you realise what a vital role they play in the local community. So really, I look back with a little bit of regret, really, that I didn't do more whilst in the corporate world to support charities. So we do urge, you know, people out there in business to do all they can. You know, it doesn't have to be financial. You know, it's just giving awareness to the staff, giving the staff the opportunity to volunteer for us, or, you know, letting us sort of put out our events and stuff like that in places of work. You know, there's lots of ways that they can help.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I will do, obviously, is urge anybody who's not got involved in any sort of charitable giving as a business to do that, because apart from anything else, even from a tax benefit point of view, it doesn't do you any harm.
No.
But from our perspective, we've worked with different charities on an annual basis. We choose a charity every year at Downtown to work alongside. And I have to say, the value that we get back in terms of working with those organisations, both from a staff point of view, but also in terms of the organisation and the different things that we're able to touch. We did do Clare House one year.
Yeah,
it's absolutely fabulous. So anyone out there who's looking to get involved in charities or indeed Clare House, drop us a line at Downtown and we'll certainly be able to give you all the information as how you can do that. We've run out of time for the first part of the programme. After the break, we'll be talking about Liverpool, David Cameron, and the local authorities hope that they're going to be given extra powers in the area of economic development and growth. Stay with us. We will be back in a mo.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the programme. I'm joined in the studio this week by Alan Rothwell, a director of Run Liverpool Marathon, and Tony Langham from the great local charity that is Clare House. Before the break, we were talking about the two organisations and the various activities and events that they get involved in. And of course, this coming summer, we have a whole range of things that are happening in this great city of ours. A food and drink festival, the Run Liverpool Marathon itself, the International Tennis Tournament, our very own City of Liverpool Business Awards. On Thursday evening, I was at an event that was organised by the Mersey Partnership, recognising some of the great work that's been done in the leisure and tourism sector. There's so much happening in our city, and no wonder, therefore, that when he was speaking on the steps of Downing Street alongside the President of the United States, Barack Obama, David Cameron this week said that the touchstone of success economically will be when the shopkeepers of Liverpool, and I think he said the factory workers of Ohio, decided that that things were working out economically. What struck me about that particular comment, guys, was two things, really. Firstly, you know, prime ministers never utter any phrase without it being fairly well thought through. So it was deliberate. The reason he spoke about Liverpool was deliberate. And I think that was the case for a couple of reasons. Firstly, there was obviously a big American audience watching that set piece speech. And outside of London, I don't think there's a city better known in the States than Liverpool. So there was obviously that connection. But I think the second thing is that David Cameron's actually visited here on a number of occasions since becoming Prime Minister. He launched his big society initiative here. There's some controversy around that that I won't get into today. But nonetheless, he was in Liverpool for that. And he's been to Wirral Waters and the Great Peel development. He's had a look at what the ambitions are for that scheme. And I think he's probably looked at the place and thought, well, do you know what? This is a city on the up. And actually, what we need to be doing is taking some credit for that, because in 3 or 4 years' time, when the economic upturn does come, then Liverpool's going to be one of those places that is on the upward curve. So I think it's great news that Cameron has actually mentioned us. And as I say, alongside Barack Obama, you couldn't get you couldn't buy that publicity, really, could you? And then on the back of that, on Thursday, it emerged that Liverpool has been named at a very prestigious shopping centre, shopping awards, in Las Vegas, as the best shopping centre in the world. Now, you know, I'm not going to argue with that because it's fantastic news for the city. But nonetheless, all of these good news stories that are coming out, great for the city, Alan, and great for people like yourselves who are trying to attract people in to take part in your event.
Well, I think I mentioned before that the issue of what the city has morphed into, that we're now very much a tourism and leisure led city. It's clear that the level of shopping that you see about the place doesn't really seem to have been affected by the economic climate. And certainly if you link leisure with the retail in terms of what we're providing as a brand new event, obviously we had aspirations to attract in the region of 10 and 12,000. And we're really getting on with that. We're around the 7,000 mark, as I mentioned. So it seems if the retail side has not been affected, the leisure side's not been affected, we seem to be doing all right. I think, generally speaking, we're a very positive city.
And it was obviously the Liverpool One project that was named as the best of the best. It was at the International Council of Shopping Centres Awards, as I say, in Las Vegas. Some very fierce competition, I have to say, from retail and leisure developments from around the world, including Dubai, Kuala Lumpur and Sydney. So, as I say, a very prestigious award, given apparently for the most outstanding examples of retail design and development, sustainability, marketing and community service. So, you know, as I say, a great boost to the city's profile, for Liverpool One in particular. But Tony, I was talking about this on Thursday morning to a competitor radio station who based in London, BBC. And the guys were trying to make out that Liverpool was still, you know, in the doldrums a bit because we're in recession. We've got all this public expenditure cuts that we're facing, as we've spoke about earlier in the programme. And, of course, their vision of Liverpool often is Boys from the Black stuff. You know, it's from that time 30 years ago. And when you're trying to explain to them that Liverpool has transformed and regenerated, it's still a difficult task. Again, looking at the issue of how Liverpool is perceived, which we spoke about at length last week, but from your perspective from the corporate days, which you were in not so long ago, did you find that there was that difficulty, those barriers, when you're dealing with colleagues from the southeast?
I mean, definitely. I think it's easy to put Liverpool down. I think people do have a misconception about Liverpool, as you say, from the 80s, when, you know, probably rightly so, it probably wasn't the place to be at that time. But the way it's grown, as I've grown up, you know, it's unrecognisable. Yeah. And the more people we can, you know, get that awareness out to, the better. So when you drive along the waterfront now, past the Albert Dock, and you see Liverpool One, even especially at night, you could be in any city in the world, and you'd still be, it's still breathtaking. Mm. Do you know, and I'm really proud of the way Liverpool's managed to pull itself up. But we just do need to get that awareness out there. I mean, we've seen this week a massive liner coming to Liverpool, and I think people will be really surprised about what they find when they come to Liverpool. Mm. And I think they, you know, they'd be really keen to come back again and again, because it is fantastic now.
And I think that is the trick, isn't it? It's actually trying to get people to come here. And although visitor numbers are healthy, an awful lot of that traffic is international. For me, it's about trying to push the brand within the UK itself. I mean, I don't know what the mix of competitors is like, Alan, from the marathon. Do we get a lot of interest from London and the south of the country?
Yeah, I think in tandem with the way that the city's actually developed in terms of its regeneration and profile, I think if you look at the trend that we have in terms of our entries, the spread certainly from around 2006 hit a spike in 2008 with the Capital of Culture year. The entries, and I'm talking about events like the Santa Dash, which is just a 5K fun run, but still and all, it's attracting people from certainly from Kent, from Cornwall, from Scotland, and most places in between. And that's a trend, it's an upward trend. And if you extend that through to the marathon and the number of overseas entries that we've got, I think it's a trend that will continue to grow. As the more people we get to come to the city, we're looking for repeat business, particularly in the marathon, because I can tell you, I've been fortunate enough to run the London Marathon 22 times out of the 30 or so it's been staged. So whilst the event is an attraction, you know, I'm not likely to have done, say, the Coventry Marathon, or no disrespect to Coventry, but the higher profile the place, the easier it is to attract people from much further afield. And once they've been and they come back, every time they see the city and its development, it's self-propagating.
And I think the other thing that we benefited from over the last few years is the fact that there are a whole range of events now. So it's not a case that you just come annually for a one-off. There are things happening all the time. So I mentioned the summer programme. This is just some of the stuff that's happening here. You know, the International Tennis Tournament, for example, I think that's in its 9th or 10th year now. And Anders Borg has built that up from something that was, let's face it, a little bit of a ramshackle thing when it started, because he was really struggling financially. He was struggling to keep the local authority on board and get the necessary support from them. And now, you know, we have McEnroe here last year, we've got Navratilova back this year, we've got Virginia Wade coming along to not to play, but to visit the tournament itself. I think there's TV coverage now. So things like that, the Food and Drink Festival I've mentioned, you know, so much happening now. And for me, Tony, you know, Liverpool is a really happening place. And actually, we ought to have a lot of confidence in ourselves, despite the challenges that we're going to face with the public sector cuts, because the private sector and the diverse nature of our economy now means that we can meet those challenges with, as I say, a good degree of confidence, certainly more so than was the case during the last recession.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as Alan touched on before, you know, Liverpool is booming on the leisure side of things. And as we can see, any time you come to Liverpool over a weekend, the amount of people that are here from out of town, the hotels are all full. But, you know, sport's always been important, and, you know, I think the football gets people to the city. The tennis is going to do the same. And the more events we can get related to sport, and the more people can get here, the more they'll see that other things are going on. I mean, this summer we've got an event on the waterfront, Liverpool Duck Race, which attracted about 5,000 people last year. We're hoping to make it a bit bigger this year on the 9th of July. You know, we've got it's in conjunction with Merseyside Fire Rescue and with Radio City's Cash for Kids. But down here on the day, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on that, you know, people wouldn't have dreamt of years ago. And it's amazing down there in front of the Beer Head now, the new canal, the way it links to the Albatross and everything. And I think the more people we get down to things like that to see them, then, you know, the better, because they will come back, because it is fantastic.
We haven't even mentioned the Grand National.
No,
and then, of course, we've got the ACC Arena, which I think has been the biggest and best legacy to come out of 2008. I think Bob Pratty and his team deserve an awful lot of credit for some of the things that they've managed to pull in there. You know, the MTV Awards, the Sports Personality Awards. We've got Labour Party conference in September. So, you know, as I say, the media often portrays everything as doom and gloom. But actually, you know, you've got to look at the fact that the glass is still half full for our city. And I think we've got to really start to take advantage of these events and the fact that Liverpool has got an awful lot of positives to say for itself at the moment. Can I just, one other point I want to make about, you know, perception of the city and, you know, being mentioned by the Prime Minister in the way that we were. Do you think that Scousers actually care about how people perceive us outside, or are we that sort of, you know, chip on our shoulder, well, we don't really care what you think because we know we're great anyway?
I think they do and they don't. Sometimes, you know, that they're happy to let criticism just drift by. But often, you know, as a community, we can be very defensive, and rightly so in some instances. But I think the old chip on the shoulder mentality is disappearing somewhat because as the generations change and the profile of the cities change, you know, we are developing a more embracing attitude towards people from outside the city, because we have a slightly different product to sell to outside the city. So, you know, we need to change our attitudes along with that. And I think we're doing that, and we're doing it very well.
Mm. Tony?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd like to give the impression that we don't care what anyone else thinks as Scousers. But I think when we get criticism, it's okay to take that sort of angle. But really, praise where praise is due. And I think when the likes of world leaders are talking about Liverpool or hearing about Liverpool, you know, you've got to be proud. I think any time any of us leave the city of Liverpool and anyone tried to say anything bad about it, we're all the first to jump on and say, oh no, this is what we're really like. And we are defensive of it. But I think we like to pretend we don't care when really we rarely do.
Mm. And you mentioned football before, and of course the two football clubs have not had the best of seasons, really. I mean, when, you know, as an Evertonian, celebrating seventh doesn't particularly sit comfortably with me, and I don't think Liverpool are over the moon about sixth place finish for Liverpool. Manchester up the road, you know, FA Cup and all that sort of thing. Again, if you go back to the mid-80s, it was almost as if the football clubs were the only thing that we had going for us. Imagine, you know, if we'd have been in the stage then where Liverpool and Everton were struggling in what was then the First Division and we had the recession. Whereas now, you know, OK, it's nice for the football clubs to be doing well, but the economy isn't wholly reliant. And, you know, I know the hoteliers are a bit disappointed, well, very disappointed that Liverpool in particular, but Everton as well, haven't qualified for Europe this season. But it's not going to have that impact that it would have done, as I say, 10, 12, 15 years ago, is it?
I think also if you look at the fact that Liverpool are not in Europe, there are so many other things going on around the city. The replacement of those bed nights will be taken up fairly well with the length and breadth of activity. Regular activity events that we've got going in any case. You know, we never had the marathon until this year, and that's going well with significant attraction from across the UK. So we'll replace those lost bed nights from Liverpool and continue to grow in future years anyway.
Yeah, and as I say, I think the ACC and the arena, you know, have really taken us to a new level as far as visitor numbers are concerned. Just before I move on to our next topic of conversation, Tony, just let me refer you back to the Duck Race, 9th of July.
Yep.
Again, can you just explain what that's about and how people could get involved?
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's the second year we've done it now. Last year was a massive success, as I said before. What it is, we've got 40,000 little blue ducks. We ask people to...
Great that they're blue.
yeah, it is.
Any reason for that?
Yeah, because they always lose the race, actually. We always have a red one. No. Each duck has a unique number on it. We ask people to adopt the duck for £2. The winning duck, there's a prize of £2,000 for the winner. But on the same time, we've got a 1,000-foot zip wire at the same time, which we ask people to get involved with. We're looking for people to be sponsored to do that. So there's still limited places left for that, if anyone's daring enough to do that.
Yeah. And how can they contact you?
They can phone me, is the easiest way, on 236-2933, and I can go through the registration procedure with them. There are a few rules and regulations about it, with it being a big zip wire. But it will be one for the daredevils out there, but everyone who comes down will enjoy it, yeah.
Great.
If you fancy it.
And for a couple of quid, you get your own duck.
Yeah, yeah, and just for £2, you get your own duck, so you're entered into the race.
Yeah.
So, you know, last year we had loads of people down there. You can buy ducks on the day as well. But, you know, when last year the weather was fantastic and it was a great day. This year is going to be bigger. We've got a few little fair rides. The Missile Fire and Rescue are putting a little demonstration on, and they've all got like a climbing wall and stuff like that. So it's going to be a great day again.
Great. And it sounds to me as though that's exactly the sort of initiative that just continues to grow. And as you say, you're adding things this year. No doubt next year will be the same. And it could end up to be a really major event for you, couldn't it? And a big fundraiser.
Well, definitely, yeah. I mean, last year it raised £80,000 for us, which, you know, out of our budget is an amazing amount to get in one event. I think it was the most we'd ever made in a one-off event. And as you say, more and more people are actually approaching us and asking, can they be involved in it? So it will continue to grow. And hopefully this year will be bigger than last year and next year will be bigger again. But, you know, it's events like that. There's not an awful lot out there similar where you can just get a family day out in Liverpool. It's free to come up. And obviously it'll cost you a couple of pounds to get involved in some of the things we've got going on.
Yeah, it's finding that niche, isn't it?
It is.
Are there any corporate organisations, any companies involved in that at all?
Well, what we've done is, in the duck race itself, there's also a corporate duck race.
Right.
So companies can adopt a duck of their own for £250.
Right.
They decorate it and with their own logo on it and with something relating to what the company do.
Yeah.
So they're actually on display at the moment in the museum in Liverpool. So we've got a cracking one from Shepherd Construction, which they've decorated with a hard hat, high visibility jacket and stuff like that. There's even like Kids in Bloom in West Derby have done a cracking one where they've got the kids to decorate it. So there's also the corporate duck competition as well, which, you know, companies can still get involved in now.
Oh, fantastic. Well, again, for £250, that's it gives you profile. And
well, definitely. I mean, they're on display in the museum until the race itself.
Right.
They're also going to appear on Radio City's website, the photos of the ducks,
right,
and on Clare House's website as well.
And the companies dress them themselves,
so,
do they?
Well, we ask the companies to dress them themselves. They're the ones that are most eye-catching, yeah.
Great, great. Well, I see that. It's fantastic. In fact, I'll speak to you later because downtown would love to get involved in that, so that'd be smashing. We spoke about David Cameron mentioned Liverpool, as I say, in his speech with alongside Barack Obama there earlier in the week. But a senior Liverpool Labour politician is backing calls for more economic growth powers to be devolved to big cities. Councillor Nick Small, who's Liverpool's Cabinet Member for Employment Skills, has been working with the Core Cities Group, which represents the 8 biggest English cities outside of London, to amend the Localism Bill, and met with the Minister for Decentralisation, Greg Clark MP, to lobby for this. Basically, what Nick Small is calling for is for a devolution of powers and more cash, I suppose, for Liverpool City Council and their 7 city neighbours to actually start to deliver in a more effective way and promote economic growth. The initiative will build on local enterprise partnerships, the Regional Growth Fund, and the Enterprise Zone, which is down at the waterfront. Both Wirral and Liverpool Waters were designated that status very recently. Nick says the new powers will allow us to create more jobs and prosperity, as well as rebalance our city's economy towards new opportunities in the knowledge and low-carbon economies. Now, chaps, you two guys are, I will consider, to be fairly average citizens of our great city. You look as though you know what you're talking about. Maybe it's just that you can fool all the people all the time. But can I just ask your opinion as people who, you know, as I say, on a day-to-day basis, go about your business and grow your businesses and you know, generate cash for your charity as best you can. Do you think there is a debate to be had about whether local government actually should be given more cash for business support and economic activity, or actually do you think, you know, the more politicians stay out of things, the better?
I think I would tend to agree with the latter, because certainly in terms of what we deliver in recent years, going back to, say, 2005, whereby the Liverpool City Council hosted three races of their own, they've systematically taken a tactical withdrawal for a variety of reasons, and ultimately opted to allow Run Liverpool to deliver the events. And I think that's for the benefit of the events. And it puts no pressure on Liverpool City Council to deliver the events. Clearly, we have to work with the City Council anyway in terms of road use, park use, wherever we take any of our events. And I think they have a key role to play there, but not necessarily in the delivery and development of what are essentially private sector businesses. It's difficult to see how they would do that with great effect when they've got, what's a good effect, when they've got so many other concerns across the board.
Mm. What about you, Tony?
Well, it depends who the decision makers are, really. I mean, if there's money there and it's in the right hands, then it depends who's got the final say. You know, if you get people of a decent standing in the business community to have some input into what they do with the funding themselves, then yeah, it could be a great thing. But what you don't want is for the money to be in the hands of people that have got no idea about how to spend the money wisely. So, you know, it could be a good thing, but it's something that you really need to look far further into.
Yeah, I think, you know, I will pick up on Alan's point there. I think local government need to see themselves as enablers of activity rather than deliverers. And I think the biggest criticism I would make of Merseyside as a whole over the past 14 years or so, when we had that big chunk of European Objective One cash, was an awful lot of the time what you found was bodies, agencies being set up, filled full with public sector workers. And then when the money ran out or the project had been delivered, those agencies would hang around anyway and they'd go and find funding from somewhere else to just keep them going. So, you know, I sort of look at this statement from Nick Small as something that, on the one hand, I have sympathy with, because I think local government and places like Liverpool does need all the help it can get. And I would prefer people like Joe Anderson, Nick Small, Gary Miller and a few others I can mention to be directing economic activity in the city alongside our local business community. But nevertheless, you know, what I don't want to see is a return to dare I say the word, but waste within the public sector, because although I think the public sector cuts that are happening in Liverpool at this moment in time are not necessarily fair, because the government adopted this one-size-fits-all approach to the budget deficit. So, you know, far more prosperous places than Liverpool are just having to find the same percentage reduction. What we can't go back to, I would suggest, is a situation where we become wholly reliant on public expenditure and public spend again. And again, my experience with some council officers further down the pecking order, not the people that I've mentioned there, the senior politicians, the chief executives and so on, is actually they just don't get business. And what they're looking to do is have a tick box exercise that quite often means it makes their life easier. And Alan, you know, I wouldn't expect you to comment directly on your experiences, but from a business perspective, the last thing we need is more bureaucracy and more red tape.
Very much so. Even as a small business, you know, we are hamstrung often by the ever-increasing demands of health and safety, you know, things like traffic orders, which were never heard of if you go back to 2004 or 2005. You know, those things came into play, and your average runner has no idea as to the complexity of how a race actually gets to the start line. And I'm talking about even, you know, 5Ks, let alone a marathon. So I think, you know, the city council, the local authorities, the emergency services and so on, which have a key role to play within our industry, they play a very good and functional role. But I don't see them as drivers in terms of development in that kind of way. I think that's best left to ourselves.
Mm. Do you think generally politicians, let's say, are aware of the positive impact that events such as marathons have, and therefore, you know, push and cajole officers to support and encourage as much as they could.
No, I don't think they do. I think they're so distanced from the actual reality of what a race day and the subsequent impact brings to the city. I think often they'll read about it in the Daily Post or the local press, hear it on Radio City or whatever. But when you look at the kind of impact that the Liverpool Marathon will make, whereby we're anticipating, I think I said before, Brighton generated £3.65 million. I happen to think, all bias aside, we've got a better tourism product here in Liverpool. Mm. So if we can't better that, then we're not doing our job right as an organisation, as a city. But I don't see any trouble in us topping that. Mm. But it won't be until after the event that there'll be more of awareness and appreciation of just what the event did. We'll probably talk about that on October the 10th.
Mm. And do you think if we can demonstrate that positive economic impact, at that stage there will be an opportunity to have a conversation with, let's say, Liverpool Vision to say, well, let's really get behind this, and whereby local authorities won't now have doles of cash to hand out to these sorts of projects, they can at least facilitate an easier passage for organisations such as yourselves to ensure that these events take place.
I've said for a while, it's not necessarily about simply, putting your hand out for cash. There are many ways in which the local authorities across the board, not necessarily the council, but all of them, can assist in terms of donating services in kind. I know there's always going to be a cost attached, but the events themselves are so complex that ultimately, if everything comes at a cost, then we can be priced out the market. I mean, we have something of a minor difficulty in terms of our entry fee for the marathon is £43 or £45. 43 is if you're an affiliated club runner, 45 if you're not. The benchmark we have is criticism that London Marathon is only £32. They fail to realise in the main that the London Marathon is 30 years in the making. Mm. It is effectively a cash cow. It generates millions of pounds. So they're fairly relaxed and don't necessarily need to have a heightened entry fee. Mm. So we're at a disadvantage there. But we live with that and we work with that. And I think the event is going to be a significant and impressive, and it will be an impressive event, and it'll impact on the city significantly commercially, financially, and in terms of profile and awareness.
Mm. And if you think about the London Marathon, I know they have an elected mayor now and have done for some time. Livingston certainly used to take full advantage, and I'm sure Boris Johnson will. I don't think Boris will be running it, but nonetheless, I'm sure he'll take advantage of the positive publicity and profile that particular event brings. So, it's something certainly I would plea to our civic leaders to get behind and perhaps be a little bit more supportive next year. And maybe we'll just facilitate a meeting or two to help that happen. Just before we close, some final thoughts really on where you think Liverpool as a city is. From a charitable point of view, Tony, do you think Liverpool now is at the stage where it can support the whole range of charities that exist? Is it going to be a real challenge for you?
Well, it's going to be a massive challenge for all charities. From what I've been told, Liverpool has more charities per head of population than any other city in Britain, which, for me, shows the generosity of the people of Liverpool. But it is a massive challenge. But, it's the job of people like myself and volunteers and ambassadors of Clare House to get the message out there of what Clare House does, the services they offer to the community and the people of Liverpool, and how important it is.
Thanks, Tony. And I'm afraid we've run out of time. Just leaves me time to say that the City of Liverpool Business Awards, hosted by Downtown Liverpool, are a sellout. So we appreciate all your support. There'll be 200-plus people at the Sefton Park Powerhouse on the 21st of July. You can, though, still vote for the nominees at our website, which is all the W's, downtownliverpool.com. So please do that. And that's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talks Business for another week. Thanks to my guests, thanks to my producer, Adam, and most of all, thank you for listening. Have a great week, enjoy the bank holiday, and don't do anything that I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.